Now we shall read Sanatana Goswami's comments on another verse in the Venugita that describes the clouds that are above the head of Krishna and Balaram as they herd the cows. In his explanation of this verse, he's explaining the deep meaning of the words of the Braja Gopis. So he has access to their minds, to their consciousness, and he will reveal what they are actually thinking. Here's the verse. In the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, Lord Krishna is continually vibrating his flute as he herds all the animals of Braja. Even under the full heat of the summer sun, seeing this scene, the cloud in the sky has expanded himself out of love. He is rising high and constructing from his own body, with its multitude of flower-like droplets of water, an umbrella for the sake of his friend. The words of Sanatana Goswami. One after another, in order of increasing importance, he selects those living beings that receive Krishna's special mercy, because the verses, even as we've been reading them, are describing a progression of more fortunate, and ultimately the final verses will describe the most fortunate. The most fortunate are those who get the most mercy from Krishna. We can understand that King Parikshit, while reciting each of these verses, feels something of the individual ecstatic moods of the devotees that he is describing. The clouds in the sky above Braja Bhumi may not have taken birth inside Braja, and by ordinary judgment, they may not even be considered living beings, but simply by floating over Braja and obtaining Krishna's mercy, these clouds have come to life. Therefore, the gopis glorify them. The gopis single out one particular cloud that went out of his way to serve Krishna. That cloud once saw Krishna, Balaram, and their friends herding their countless cows, buffaloes, and other animals and letting them wander, even in the hot summer season. And as they wandered, Krishna played constantly on his flute. The cloud guessed that Krishna and his friends might be getting tired, so he placed himself just above the spot where the boys gathered at midday, on the relatively cool ground in the shade of a circle of trees. Listening to Krishna play his flute and call out to the cows, the cloud, filled with fine drops of rain, as if to shed ecstatic tears of joy. The cloud, filled with ecstasy, rumbled with gentle thunder, as if his voice were ecstatically choking within his throat. And he sprinkled fine drops of rain as if to shed ecstatic tears of joy. These offerings of love inspired Krishna to encourage the cows even more, and in Krishna's sweet voice to take advantage of the opportunity. And in his deep sweet voice, he encouraged them to take advantage of the opportunity to eat plenty of grass. The cloud's increasing ecstasy as he watched Krishna from closer and closer made the cloud grow bigger and bigger. He could presume himself Krishna's friend because both he and Krishna were fully absorbed in working for the general welfare of all. So, as a person naturally serves a dear friend, the cloud took care to serve Krishna. Like a huge umbrella, he shaded Krishna and he poured down a cooling rain. A cloud's raindrops are called its flowers, Megapushpa. So the drops that fell on the boys were like small flowers. Or else the cloud literally showered them with heavenly flowers. This cloud gave special pleasure to Krishna by trying to serve not only Krishna, but also his brother Balaram and all the cowherd boys and cows and the other animals. By describing the situation, the gopi who is speaking this means to say, "My dear girls, that cloud is most fortunate, but we are so unfortunate. In every respect, our fate is just the opposite of the clouds. When Krishna goes out to herd his cows, we hardly ever have a chance to see him. And even if we do see him, we become bewildered as we look at him due to the sound of his flute. Distressed by love, we become debilitated, unable to act. How then can we do any practical service for Krishna, like shading him from the noontime sun?" This is the bhavana, the mood that Sanatana Goswami is ascribing to the gopis in the clouds of Braja. So full of rus, so full of a sweet serving mood of affection for Krishna and for everything, everyone connected to Krishna. A second verse. Clouds float in the sky, but they are not the only ones who float in the sky. There are also not horses. Oh, birds, yes. Another verse spoken by the gopis who are missing Krishna and hearing his flute as he wanders in the forest and they are at home. Oh, mother, in this forest, all the birds have risen onto the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. They're explaining, why is it that birds sit in the trees? It must be to see Krishna. This is their desire too. If they could fly up into the trees and it would help them see Krishna, they would do it in a moment. Describing the birds, with closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibrations of his flute. And they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely these birds are on the same level as great sages. Here are the words of Sripad Sanatana Goswami. Another gopi, enchanted by hearing Krishna's flute, sings this verse to Mother Yasoda, or else to one of her girlfriends. Here, even more fortunate birds are glorified, those who live in the same trees that provide shade for Krishna as he wanders about the Vrindavan forest. All the birds in Vrindavan should be recognized as great sages, or as indicated by the word praya, taken to mean many. Sages are not so numerous in Braja, but there are many birds. These birds are able to hear the sweet song, the sweet and mellow song of Krishna's flute, which Krishna plays for the enjoyment of the cows and the cowherd boys and the girls of Vrindavan. When Krishna is far away, the birds may not hear the sound distinctly, but still its effect on them is powerful, vivid. That sound bestows upon them the vision of Krishna, Krishna Ikshitam. And by bringing them to the tops of the trees, it also becomes the means by which Krishna sees them. The flute song is also Krishna Ikshitam. He's given different meanings of one of the words, Krishna Ikshitam. The flute song is also Krishna Ikshitam, seen by Krishna, in the sense that only Krishna can conceive of such beautiful music. It is produced from Krishna, Krishnasya Uditam. And this suggests also that the sound of the flute creates an opportunity for the birds to perceive Krishna by the process of hearing. Hearing the sound is another way for them to see Krishna, who is not easily visible to them through the abundant foliage, through the greenery of the trees and the branches. Though the rich new growth on the branches makes it difficult for the birds to see Krishna, it also attracts Krishna to the trees to pick the fresh leaves, fruits, and flowers. So the birds put aside their normal business of foraging and they fly to the highest branches where the leaves and twigs don't block the line of sight between them and Krishna. Perched in the treetops, their eyes closed in meditation, like the mobile phones of everyone. They are shut down, unable to tweak their crow-like sound. Perched in the treetops, their eyes closed in meditation, the birds appear like great sages. Indeed, sages who want to devote themselves to Krishna perch themselves on various branches of the tree of the Vedas, which bears the attractive tender twigs of various methods of spiritual advancement. The sages learn from the Vedas how to realize Krishna, and with enthusiasm, they practice the disciplines approved by the Vedas, such as offering to Krishna the results of all work. But even while seriously studying the Vedas and pondering, thinking about what the Vedas mean, the sages become attracted to hearing the sound of Krishna's all-attractive flute, and they become eager to see him. They cease to be attached to their Vedic education and instead become attached to seeing Krishna constantly in their hearts. Closing their eyes in great ecstasy, they then dedicate themselves exclusively to his Nama Sankirtan. Or else, it may be understood that sages devoted to the personality of Godhead come to the Vrindavan forest to become birds just so that they may listen to the sound of his flute. According to the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami, all sages, Even if they are already content in their own selves, they should become birds in the Vrindavan forest. Or, granting that some sages are disqualified from entrance into Vrindavan because they are less fortunate and confused by Maya, at least most of them should come to Vrindavan. They should become birds in Vrindavan because thus they can easily achieve what they aspire for and much more. Because the birds living in the Vrindavan forest have the great fortune to be able to hear Krishna's flute so often, they should be acknowledged to be greater devotees than even the bees. And thinking about the birds makes Krishna's girlfriends, the gopis, even more disappointed than before. How terrible it is. We don't have such unalloyed devotion for Krishna. We can neither see Krishna nor hear his flute when he goes to the forest because they must stay home in the village, carefully watched by their mother-in-laws. We are unable to renounce everything and climb the branches of the trees. And when we don't see Krishna, we can't simply stop talking and close our eyes like these birds. To hell with us, gopis. We are so unfortunate. Tomorrow, we shall hear about the deer of Vrindavan, who are very dear to Krishna and so very fortunate. Now, who remembers where we left off in yesterday's reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila 4, and the relationship between Srila Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Who remembers something that Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami? This is always the most difficult question. What happened yesterday? Unless, of course, you wrote something down in your book, then. Hundreds of times, Mahaprabhu said, I will kill myself, if that's what it took to attain Krishna. But this, the proof is I'm still here. Don't commit suicide, even though you may feel your life is worthless without being able to serve Krishna. So of course this takes such an intensity of love to actually experience one's life is worthless without being able to serve Krishna intimately and deeply. It takes so much love, true love, to feel in this way, to experience life in this way. Usually we have so much busyness, distraction. We have so many important things that we have to do. And we usually don't have time to place our minds, to even serve Krishna. What to speak of, even when we have time, because we are so busy. We don't have the mind to do so. And as our Sachinandan Maharaj has been speaking about, and as Srila Jiva Goswami explains in his Bhakti Sandarbha, that while we're doing our service, the placing the mind in the service, placing the mind with devotion into our service, this is what gives the devotional service its power. That I am doing this, yatta pravata bhutanam, I am doing this for the pleasure of Krishna. Oh Krishna, whether I'm sweeping the floor or speaking into a microphone or whatever, for Krishna's pleasure, let my consciousness be focused upon this O Krishna, let me do this in such a way that you will be pleased. Then the service becomes devotional service. Otherwise, it becomes work. And when we do work and work and work and work and work without devotion, it will become quite boring, because what inspires all the people of the world to work? To get fruit, something, either money or some prestige or this or that, to get something for me. So if we just work with no devotion, this desire, well, why am I doing this? I'm not getting anything out of it. What's in it for me? That must come to the heart. Rather than let Krishna be pleased by this offering. So, Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami, no, suicide or giving up one's body, even in a holy place, this is not the process to attain Krishna. And what does he tell him is the process? To chant Krishna's names. And how to chant Krishna's names? Without offense, without insulting the holy names. And we heard, in the words of Sanatana Goswami, how Krishna was so pleased when the cloud offered service not only to him, but to Balaram, and to the boys, and to the cows, because they were tadiya, they were connected with Krishna in loving devotion. So the offenses against the holy names, especially, but also the other offenses, seva aparada, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the aparadas, the offenses that have to be avoided, the offenses that make us durdaivam, unfortunate, so we have no anuraga, no attachment and taste for the holy name. He also says seva aparada is one of the offenses that make us unfortunate. And he also says seva aparada means worshipping the deity. And he also says, he puts Vaishnava aparat in its own category. And he also says that offenses towards anyone, ordinary people, so-called ordinary people, or any living entity, this will also make us unfortunate, unable to taste the sweetness of Krishna's holy name. So, he says to chant. I would like to read with Haridas Thakur, who was the Namacharja, the greatest teacher of the holy name. So in this verse that we ended with, of the nine processes, tar madhya sarva shreshta nama sankirtana, niraparade nama loyala paya, you will be able to get prem, dana, this wealth. This is true wealth. Prem. Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. And Prabhupada says in the verse itself, of the nine processes of devotional service, tara madhye, sarva shreshta, the most important is to always chant the holy name of the Lord. And if one does so, if somehow or another one can constantly, kirtaniya sadahari, chant Krishna's names, avoiding the ten kind of offenses, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead. Now here is Prabhupada's purport. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu gives the following directions in his Bhakti Sandarbha, Anuchet 270. And there is a quotation from that in Sanskrit. And Prabhupada translates it. Chanting the holy name is the chief means of attaining love of God, love of Godhead. This chanting or devotional service does not depend on any paraphernalia, nor on one's having taken birth in a good family. But what does it depend on? By humility and meekness, one attracts the attention of Krishna. That is the verdict of the Vedas. One attracts the attention of Krishna, one attracts the mercy of Krishna. Therefore, if one becomes very humble and meek, he can easily attain the lotus feet of Krishna in this age of Kali. That is the fulfillment of all great sacrifices, penances, and austerities, because when one achieves ecstatic love of Godhead, he attains the complete perfection of life. Therefore, whatever one does in executing devotional service must be accompanied with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. That is the end of the Sundarbha quotation. Whatever service we do should be accompanied by the chanting of the holy names, because Kalona Stevana Stevana Steva Gatianyata. Prabhupada continues. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, has been praised by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Namasta, the first verse. Nikala Shuti Mola Ratnamala Duti Nirajita Pada Pankajanta Ayi Muktukula Upashyamanam Paristvam Harinama Samsrayami. O Harinam, the tips of the toes of your lotus feet are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads. So the Upanishads glorify and worship the Lord, His holy name, because the Lord and His holy name are the same. The Upanishads, which are the crown jewel of the Vedas. You, O holy name, are eternally adored by liberated souls such as Narada and Sukadev. O Harinam, this is the mood or a mood that we can chant in. O Harinam, I take complete shelter of you. You are my hope. My hope is no longer me and my abilities, nor am I hopeless. I take shelter of you, and your kindness is my hope. In a humble, meek mood, Trinadapi Sunichena, and Prabhupada will quote that later, we should take shelter of Krishna's names, chant Krishna's names. Similarly, Srila Sanatana Goswami has praised the chanting of the holy name as follows in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 1, verse 9. In the verse beginning, Jayati, Jayati, Namananda Rupam Marari. All glories to the all-blissful holy name of Krishna, of Sri Krishna, which causes the devotee to give up all conventional religious duties, meditation, and worship. When somehow or other, uttered even once the holy name, uttered even once by a living entity, the holy name awards him liberation. The holy name of Krishna is the highest nectar. Sanatana Goswami was given that instruction by Mahaprabhu and he took it. And this is his realization. The holy name of Krishna is the highest nectar. It is my very life. It is my only treasure. I would like to read some of Sanatana Goswami's own commentary on this verse. Amongst the various practices of devotional service, The most important is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Chanting the Lord's name is Ananda Rupam, pure bliss, because it makes ecstasy rise in the heart. Chanting the holy name is also Ananda Rupam in the sense that it is the essence of ecstasy, and it makes everything it touches ecstatic. In this verse, the author again repeats the exclamation, Jayati, indicating that Harinam, the name of the Lord, is the greatest manifestation of the Supreme Lord's attractiveness and also of His mercy. One who realizes the value of Harinam will choose to rely on chanting Harinam rather than on other kinds of spiritual effort. And then at the end of his comment, a short paragraph. This is... At the end of this verse, Srila Sanatana Goswami describes his own relationship with Harinam. It is everything to him. Nothing else is important. For him, Harinam is the nectar of immortality, the happiness of true liberation. Countless times greater than the satisfaction of impersonal mukti, Harinam is also greater than the bliss of Vaikuntha. It is sweeter than all other attractive things. It is Sanatana Goswami's very life. It is his only ornament, a limitless reservoir of auspiciousness, the entire focus of his attention. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada continues his purport, 2.1.11, Sukadev Goswami says, Etanna vidyamananam itchitam akutobayam yoginam nripanirnitam harinama anukirtanam. Because Maharaj Prickett asked the question, because he was going to die within 7 days, he asked the question, what should I do? I have 7 remaining days to live. How should I spend that time? Should I get fast broadband, faster than fast broadband, and download every movie imaginable? Should I, obviously, I'm being facetious, because in those days there were no even dial-up connections. There was technology, but of a different sort. They were so primitive that they didn't have computers. How is it possible that they survived? Isn't it inconceivable? They actually survived without computers, without email, MP3 players even, without glasses, without false teeth. Oh no. They survived, and yet they were ecstatic and not full of anxiety. Isn't that amazing? They actually walked from place to place. Isn't that inconceivable? I mean, there were other ways. There was boats and carts. Simple living, and their thinking was high, and they were happy. So this verse was Sukadev Goswami's answer to the question of Maharaj Prickett. What to do at the end of my life? And there were many sages surrounding the king at that time who was soon to die, and they were disagreeing with one another. I've noticed that doctors, astrologers, and sages, they don't seem to ever agree. Or geologists. Do geologists agree with each other? Rarely. Or anyone else. In fact, no one agrees. So therefore, when Sukadev Goswami walked in, he was so exalted, although so young. Everyone stood up in respect. They offered him the seat of honor. And they wanted to hear, and especially Maharaj Prickett wanted to hear what his answer was. And this was his answer. O king, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, for everyone, for all, including those who are free from material desires, including those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and including those who are self-satisfied already by dint of their own transcendental realization of knowledge. Now here is the comment of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, or part of it. It is understood from this scripture that bhakti is being described. Amongst the angas, the limbs of bhakti, which is defined as the chief one, which stands out like an emperor exerting power everywhere, this verse answers that question. Amongst the angas of bhakti, hearing, chanting, and remembering are the three chief parts. And amongst these three, chanting is the chief. In chanting, however, there is chanting of the Lord's name, chanting of his qualities, and chanting of his pastimes. Amongst these, anukirtana, chanting of his name according to one's own bhakti, is the best. Anukirtana also means continuous chanting. It is not only my conclusion, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. This has been concluded near Nitam by the previous acharyas. Therefore, there is no need for further inquiries or proofs. And Prabhupada starts ending his purport by saying, similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said in his Shikastak, Srinada pi sunichena, tarada pi sihisnuna, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadhari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind. Namasraya kori jatana tumi. One should take shelter of the holy name. Thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Regarding the 10 offenses in chanting the holy name, one may refer to Adi Lila, chapter 8, verse 24. So after hearing what Mahaprabhu's words were to him, Sanatan Goswami, in text 72, was exceedingly astonished because he had not mentioned to anyone his secret thought of committing suicide because he was feeling worthless due to his inability to perform devotional service due to his circumstances, which included the horrible oozing sores upon his body. So Mahaprabhu could understand his mind, and Sanatan was astonished. And he understood, my decision to commit suicide has not been greatly appreciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who knows everything, past, present, and future, has forbidden me to commit suicide. Sanatan then fell down. He touched the lotus feet of the Lord and spoke to him as follows. My Lord, you are the omniscient, merciful, independent, supreme Lord. Exactly like an instrument of wood, I dance as you make me do so. So here is the hint at this point that what is going on with Sanatan Goswami and Mahaprabhu is being orchestrated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his own pastime. Now, why is he doing this? He's doing it for his own purposes. We won't discuss that point much now, but tomorrow that point comes up even more strongly. You are making me dance as you desire. Nich Adam Paramamuni Pamana Swabhav. I am lowborn. I am the lowest. I am condemned. I am naturally sinful. Just like there are some souls who have a natural disposition towards spiritual life and to love Krishna or to renunciation. Sanatana Goswami says, I have a natural tendency towards sinfulness. If you save me by your kindness, as you appear to be doing right now, what will be the gain? If you keep me alive, what will be the profit? I want to kill myself. What is the value of my existence? And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied with a crash of cymbals, your body is my property. You have already surrendered to me. Therefore, you have no longer any claim to your body. Why should you want to destroy another's property? Can't you consider what is right and wrong? Your body is... Sanatana Goswami is so humble and Mahaprabhu is chastising him. Your body is my principal instrument. Just like the hand is an extension of one, in one sense, and of course it's part of the body. It's an extension of the mind. It fulfills the desires of the mind. Mahaprabhu is saying, your body is my principal instrument for executing many necessary functions. By your body I shall carry out many tasks. And then, in the next verses, Mahaprabhu says what he's going to do with Sanatana Goswami. What he is going to do through Sanatana Goswami. You have to ascertain the basic principles of a devotee. What governs the life of a devotee? You have to ascertain these. You have to make the discrimination, decide upon it. You have to ascertain the basic principles of devotional service, of love of God, Vaishnava duties, and Vaishnava characteristics, Vaishnava achar. You will also have to explain Krishna's devotional service. You have to establish centers for cultivation of love for Krishna, excavate lost places of pilgrimage. Where? In Vrindavan. And teach people how to adopt the renounced order. Mathura Vrindavan is my own very dear abode. I want to do many things there to preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explains in his purport. He explains how Sanatana Goswami was entrusted to do each of these things and how he accomplished them. But in the purport he says how Sanatana Goswami only by the endeavors of Sri Sanatana Goswami were all the lost places of pilgrimage in Vrindavan area excavated. He established Madan Mohan, the first deity in the Vrindavan area. Very special, yes? Tonight, Krishna willing, by the mercy and kindness of some very good-hearted devotees, we will have some Mahaprasadam from Madan Mohan, the deity established by Srila Sanatana Goswami. Mahaprabhu continues, "By the order of my mother, I'm sitting here in Jagannath Puri. Therefore, I cannot go to Mathura Vrindavan to teach people how to live according to religious principles. I have to do all this work through your body. But you want to give it up. How can I tolerate this?" At that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sanatana Goswami replied to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I offer my respect, tabe sanatana kahe, toma ke namaskar." He just simply, after hearing this, he's thinking himself, the lowest of the low of the low, with no good quality within him worth even saving his life. And then Mahaprabhu says, "This is what I'm going to do through you." And he just offers a little obeisances. Toma ke namaskar. Toma gambira ridaye ke bujite pare. Who can understand? No one can understand the deep ideas that you are planning within your heart. What is in your heart? What is in your mind? What are your plans? No one can understand. A wooden doll chants and dances according to the direction of a magician, but he does not know how he's dancing and singing. My dear Lord, as you cause one to dance, he dances accordingly. But how he dances and who is causing him to dance, he does not know. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to Thakur Haridas. "My dear Haridas, please hear this." And this is a very typical way of putting pressure in India on another. You talk to him and look at him. You point with this hand and you say, like this, "Look what he's doing." This puts the pressure on even more. He says, "My dear Haridas," and the person who's also becoming instrumental in this, "My dear Haridas, please hear me," not looking at him, "this gentleman," but pointing to him, "this gentleman wants to destroy another's property." One who is entrusted, and a good moral advice here, one who is entrusted with another's property does not distribute it or use it for his own purposes. Therefore, tell him not to do such an unlawful thing. And Haridas replies, "We are falsely proud of our capacities. Actually, we don't understand your deep intentions." So Sanatana Goswami says, "Your heart is very deep. I cannot understand what you wish to do." And Haridas says the same thing. "Unless you inform us, we cannot understand what your purpose is, nor what you want to do through whom." "My dear sir," and this is Haridas' conclusion, "you, a great personality, have accepted Sanatana Goswami. He is greatly fortunate. No one can be as fortunate as he." This is the conclusion of Haridas. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas Thakur and he embraced Sanatana Goswami again. And then he got up and left to perform his noon duties. He didn't speak anymore. But Sanatana Goswami, with the sores, the oozing sores, the pus covering his body, had to undergo the embrace of Mahaprabhu. The mixed emotions, the torture of covering your beloved Lord's body with infectious pus, the one who you want to serve more than you want to live. Your attachment isn't to your body, it's to his service, to him, to your Lord, who has brought life to you. The life of your life. You're covering his body with infectious pus. And he leaves. Mahaprabhu leaves. And then Haridas. So he's feeling himself. How can I, Sanatana, how can I do something like this? I'm low. I can't do any service. And not only that, look what I'm doing to my beloved Lord. By his mercy, he wants to embrace me. But look what I'm doing in exchange. Mahaprabhu leaves. And Thakur Haridas turns to Sanatan and says, my dear Sanatan. And he embraces him too. No one can find the limit of your good fortune. Sanatan is feeling himself most unfortunate, and Haridas is telling him, your fortune is unlimited. Why? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted your body as his own property. Therefore, no one can equal you in good fortune. What Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot do with his own personal body, he wants to do through you. And he wants to do it in Mathura. He wants to do it Namitta Karan Bhava Savya Sachin. He wants to do it. He will do it. And you will be the instrument by which he will do it. He trusts you so much that he doesn't consider you any different from himself. Now, what is the quality in Sanatan that is allowing, causing, desiring Mahaprabhu to desire to use him in this way? And this, these qualities, the trustworthiness of Sanatan, the depths of Sanatan's devotion, loving devotion, that is what makes him trustworthy. We were speaking yesterday about the king in the most private parts of his palace can relax and just be himself. Because he knows those who are there love him to such a degree, in such a mood, with such intimacy, mamata, affection, you are ours, that they will never misuse the trust of the that intimacy brings for themselves. They will not take any percentage for themselves. So many times you can buy a best-selling book by the butler in the king or the queen's palace, who reveal everything about what's really going on in there. In other words, they're allowed a certain intimacy, and intimacy brings closeness where the heart is completely revealed, and they misuse that for themselves. Sanatan Goswami, in this pastime, is demonstrating the qualities of a soul. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is using him to dance. He's pulling the strings in this whole lila to show what it takes. If you remember, in the first class, we read this verse, very mysterious verse actually, by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, glorifying Sarup Damodar. When Mahaprabhu says, amongst your devotees, isn't there anyone who is qualified to reveal the most intimate, loving relationship between the gopis and Krishna, Krishna's most innermost quarters in Vrindavan? Isn't there anyone who is qualified. What is the qualification? It is this depth of love, this trustworthiness. And then Mahaprabhu looked at Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami wasn't thinking, oh, he's obviously going to look at me. He was thinking, I'm the lowest. Everyone is more qualified than me. And Mahaprabhu indicated he is the one with his glance. In Braja, everything is indicated by glances. He's the one. And look how Mahaprabhu is treating him here. Chastisement. But he's given him service and he's claimed him as his own. These two things, and his humility, he's claimed him as his own by giving him service. Service is the most valuable thing. It's the opportunity. It is not work. It is not karma. It is devotional service. Prabhupada always put those words together. You can translate bhakti as devotion, but Prabhupada always translated as devotional service. This is the external gesture manifested from the bhakti, the devotion within the heart. The flower that we offer is the symbol. It carries the devotion. It symbolizes, this is what's in my heart and I'm offering and placing it at your feet. So what is it, the basic quality that makes someone trustworthy? Below the level of love even, it begins with Sharanagati, surrender. And Srila Jiva Goswami explains that this surrender, I am yours, this revoking of my independence, which is so carefully cultivated in contemporary society, which is so valuable for achieving on the material level, it is revoked and placed at the feet of Guru and Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata. I am yours. And there is where bhakti begins. Because, as Jiva Goswami explains, surrender gives one a sense of belonging. Belonging, just like we were speaking yesterday about first name, just introducing oneself by one's first name. Hi, how you doing? I'm Warren. There's no sense of belonging to anything, me in relationship to anything. So it's always in relationship. So surrender establishes us in relationship and it fills us with a sense of belonging. I belong to someone. And that causes Krishna to accept that person as belonging to him, as part of his family, his dear ones. Otherwise, samoham savabhuteshu name dveshosti napriya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayati. Becoming special in the relationship, acknowledging, awakening to one's relationship, because we do belong to Krishna. Actually, there's no avoiding it. There is no avoiding it because that is the definition of the absolute truth. Param Satyam is that it is everything is included within the Absolute Truth. It is all-inclusive, all tattvas, all other truths, all in existence, all in non-existence. There is nothing external to the Absolute Truth. And that Absolute Truth, in its, that's Bhagavan, see Krishna, in his personal feature, most personal feature. So when one turns to Krishna from Bahyamukha, to Samukh, turning our face to Krishna, which is the process and purpose of bhakti, and then being in front of Krishna, offering ourselves to Krishna, which is our natural consciousness. Yes, Krishna, I am yours. I am yours. Now I acknowledge that I am yours. I am dependent on you. That's reality. Who's independent in this world? Independent of breathing? Just imagine if my breathing was under my control. If it was one of the things I was responsible to do every day is breathe. And I'd be doing something, walking down the road, and my mind would wander, and I'd forget to breathe, or digest the food, or the heart beating. Who's independent? What can we renounce? Who is independent? We are fully dependent on Krishna. So acknowledging reality, of course, is always better than trying to avoid reality, because trying to avoid reality is called illusion. And if there is a fight between illusion and reality, what will win? Well, there's only two choices, and I'll give you a hint. Illusion cannot defeat reality. Just like, and anyone want to experiment, there's a brick wall over there, and imagine it is as soft as cotton, and run towards it. Reality always wins, because it is real. An illusion, it always loses because it is false, it is not there. So, when one surrenders, as Sanatana has long ago surrendered, and Mahaprabhu has accepted him, you are mine, you are the extension of my very body, of my desire, and I will do so many things through you. You are a fit instrument to do such wonderful things. You belong to me. That is the result of surrender. Oh, my Lord, I am yours. And our Lord says, yes, you are mine. Frightening for the materialistic mind to place ourselves at the mercy of others. He might even put horrible oozing sores all over you. And you want to escape this by even killing yourself. And he says, no. No, you are mine. You can't do it. You are mine to do with as I like. Frightening for the material mind. Therefore, this beginning of bhakti is this faith, trusting that, yes, Krishna, I am yours. You do as you like with me. As long as it's good, please. I like flowers, no thunderbolts, please. And as long as you keep the flowers going, I'm yours. And if there's an occasional thunderbolt, or you cause me incredible pain by embracing me when the last thing I want to do is cover your transcendental body with this oozing, infectious pus, and cause me incredible pain in that way, when you've caught me, I can't leave because I'm yours. I've given myself to you, and you're causing me this pain. not giving me what I want at all. This is how a devotee is tested. Our Maharaj Satchinandana spoke about the testing of a devotee at the initial session. As we sat on the roof looking at Giriraj, this testing is, it's a part of devotional service, and tomorrow is the day we'll speak about that and why we are tested and the nature of the tests. But it's basically, in the simplest sense, so that we can see which way we go when the pressure is on. It allows us to hold up a mirror to ourselves and see what we actually look like, instead of what we're imagining, how wonderful we are. I've done this and I've done that, and especially this person has done that and he's terrible, and this person has done that, look at everyone else, I'm so wonderful. And the tests, one of the purpose of the tests is they are mirrors. So we get to actually and undeniably see how deeply we accept Krishna as our shelter, and how deeply we have given ourselves to Him to do with as He likes, as opposed to how I like. I like rose petals, and I get thorns, and my mind doesn't like it, and it runs, and it takes shelter of so many other things. Am I fully trustworthy? Not yet. I want to go to Braja, and I want to say Radhe, 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 but am I trustworthy? Will I write a book? Do I want to go to take photographs and come back and say, I've been to Braja. Have you? Oh, I don't have to say that. You'll think that. I've been to Braja. You know what that means. You want to see my slideshow? How nice it is. Taking my percentages of labha, puja, pratishtadi, yata, upasakakan. The weeds of devotional service. Taking my percentages. Prestige. Liking being worshipped. Liking everyone say, oh, what a nice lecture, liking this, liking that. Or like Sanatana Goswami, the trustworthy one, who has proven himself to the core, he belongs to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu can do whatever he likes to him, including covering his body with sores, itching sores, infectious sores, and then embracing him. So Thakur Haridas says, you are so fortunate. Mahaprabhu has accepted you as his very own. And Sanatana Goswami replies, excuse me, there's a little more what Haridas says. I can understand, did we read 97? I can understand from the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he wants you to write books about the conclusive decision of devotional service and about the regulative principles ascertained from revealed scriptures. And then he laments his own fate. My body could not be used in the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, although it took its birth in the land of India, this body has been useless. And Prabhupada, in his purport, speaks about the duty of those born in the holy land of Bharat, to preach, to become realized and to preach. Why? To save human society. So when Sanatana Goswami heard these very humble words of Haridas Thakur's estimation of himself and glorifying the fortune of Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami replied, "Oh Haridas, who is equal to you? You have such a low estimation of yourself, but who is equal to you? You are one of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You are living in Jagannath Puri with him. You are the most fortunate. The mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for which he has descended as an incarnation, is to spread the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now, instead of personally doing so, he's not traveling all over. He's doing something else. He's relishing. Instead of personally doing this, he's spreading it through you." And the Bengali is, "Prabhu Karena Toma Dwara." Dwara means gate. You are the gate that he's using to work his miracles. It's through you. And how fortunate you are. My dear sir, you are chanting the holy name 300,000 times daily. How many rounds is that? 186, 92, is it? Which? 192. Every day, 192 rounds. That doesn't leave much time, does it, for anything else? And not only that, you chant your 3 lakhs of names every day, your 192 rounds, and you're not bored. You're increasingly relishing the sweetness of Krishna is his holy name. And also you're informing everyone of the importance of such chanting. It is you who Mahaprabhu is using. You are tested to the core. And what is in the core is love for Krishna, as exemplified by chanting, your chanting of the holy names and your preaching. Some behave well, but do not preach the cult of Krishna consciousness. This is 102. Where others preach, but do not behave properly. Very important concept to put both together. But you, O Haridas, you simultaneously perform both duties in relationship to the holy, both duties in relationship to the holy name by your personal behavior and by your preaching and by your chanting. That's the personal behavior. And you practice what you preach. You preach about the holy names being everything, and you chant like that. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world. You are the most humble, Kirtaniya Sadahari, and you are the one always chanting. You are the most advanced devotee in the world. In this way, and this scene is now closing, A Mata Dvijana, in this way, these two, Nanakatarange, in the happiness of discussing various Krishna conscious subject matters, Krishna Kata Aswadaya, they tasted Krishna Kata because they were both so qualified in every way, in every way. And they enjoyed life together. That's sort of the end of the scene. Thakur Haridas was tested so heavily in thousands of ways. He was beaten because he was a Muslim. and he was chanting the names of Krishna. He was brought to the king's court. He was beaten in 22 marketplaces. They said, renounce this chanting of holy name. You'll be caned and killed. And he said, if you cut up my body in small pieces, still, how could I give up the holy names? What's the problem? There is one God. And if a Hindu becomes a Muslim, inspired by the Lord, what's the difficulty? And if one Muslim becomes a chanter of Krishna's holy name, what's the problem? What's the difficulty? And they tried to kill him by beating him. And he did not feel the slightest pain because of his full shelter and chanting and hearing the holy names. 100% trustworthy, so Mahaprabhu could use him in any way he wanted. He was tested. And finally, the people were beating him. They said to him, Haridas, if you don't die, we're going to get into so much trouble because the king will think that we've been light on you and we haven't done our duty. He's going to chop our heads off. And Haridas replied, oh, if you want me to die, then I'll die. Okay. I don't want you to see you any. Such humility to the core, not artificial, but to the core, surrendered. So he went into yogic trance, lost all his bodily symptoms. They threw his body in the Ganga, or they brought him to the king and the Qazi. And they said, we should bury him, he's dead. We've killed him, we've done our work. And they said, no, if we bury him, he'll get a good result. Throw him in the Ganga. This horrible person. So they did that, and Haridas came back to life, ended his trance, and kept on chanting. He was tested so heavily. A prostitute was sent to break his vow. And he said, just sit here, I just have to chant a few more rounds. And he chanted and chanted and chanted and chanted, and she heard the holy name. And she changed her heart. He did not quiver from a servant mood to an enjoying mood in the slightest. He was so fixed that Maya Devi herself came to him as the most beautiful woman to test him. He did not quiver, what to speak of change. And she also took initiation from him in the holy name. She was also attracted. This is Thakur Haridas, tested, proven to the core. And what was in the core? Bhakti, love for Krishna, full surrendered devotion. So that scene has ended. So then, during the Rath Yatra, all the devotees arrived from Bengal to visit the cart festival, as they had done previously. During the Rath Yatra festival, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again danced before the cart of Jagannath. When Sanatana Goswami saw the dancing of Mahaprabhu, his mind was astonished. And this is such a wonderful chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya Lila. If I remember, it is 14, where Mahaprabhu displays the mood of Krishna being brought to, his mood is bringing Krishna to Vrindavan, the mood of Kurukshetra, the mood of Krishna meeting the residents of Vrindavan, especially the Braja Gopis in Kurukshetra. So seeing the activities and the dancing of Mahaprabhu there, Sanatana Goswami was able to penetrate into this very mysterious occurrence, and he was astonished. The Lord's devotees from Bengal stayed at Jagannath Puri during the 4 months of the rainy season, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Sanatana to all of them. Now, Sanatana Goswami, and then there's a list in text 110 of all the devotees. And the Lord asked Sanatana Goswami to offer obeisances to all the devotees in a way that befitted each one. So he offered his obeisances, and the words here again, it's Charanavandana. He worshipped the lotus feet of the devotees in appropriate ways according to who they were. And why did Mahaprabhu again tell Sanatan to Charanavandan, to worship the lotus feet of the devotees, is because he wanted to make Sanatan an object of their mercy, an object of their prayers, an object of their blessings. He wanted all the devotees to bless Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami in text 112, he was dear to everyone. He captured the heart of everyone because of their mercy, but it was their mercy interacting with his exalted qualities in learning and his humility and his surrenderedness and his service attitude. And his taking shelter of the holy names. And his love for Mahaprabhu. He captured their hearts. They bestowed their mercy upon him. They bestowed upon him mercy, friendship, and honor according to their situation in relationship to him in age and exaltedness. Mercy to from the superiors, friendship with the equals, and honor to him from those who are younger than him. When all the other devotees, so they stayed the 4 months of the rainy season, the other devotees returned to Bengal after the Rath Yatra festival. Sanatana Goswami stayed under the care of the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami observed the Dola Yatra ceremony, the Holika festival, Mahaprabhu's appearance, with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this way, his pleasure increased in the company of the Lord. Sanatana Goswami had come to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri during the month of April and May. And during the month of May, June, which is very hot, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested him. In that month, May, June, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the garden of Yameshwar, the garden of Lord Shiva, and he accepted prasad there at the request of the devotees. At noon, when it was time for lunch, the Lord called for Sanatana Goswami, Madhyana Bhikshakale. It was the time when Sanatana Goswami would do his bhikkha, his bhiksha, his begging for his food. And at that time, Mahaprabhu was in the garden with the devotees of Yameshwar Toto, and he called for Sanatana Goswami at midday, just at the time he would usually go and do his bhiksha. And when Sanatana got the news that Mahaprabhu is calling for you, he wants you to come. His beloved Lord wanted him to come. His happiness increased. At noon, Madhyan, the sand on the beach was as hot as fire. But Sanatana Goswami came by that path. Overwhelmed by joy, by being called by the Lord, Sanatana Goswami did not feel that his feet were burning in the hot sand. Anandita Mane. Just the fact that his Lord was calling him, just that thought filled him, his mind, with ananda, ecstasy. And he walked on the path of the hot burning sand, with his mind so full of ecstasy, he did not even notice the heat. His love for Mahaprabhu and in his relationship with Mahaprabhu filled his heart with so much happiness, spiritual happiness, that the material became insignificant. The fact that his so-called material body was burnt, literally burnt by the hot sand, he did not notice. If we try to become fixed and focused without the accompanying love for Krishna arising in our heart, we will not be able to do it. We have to develop love for Krishna, prema pumarto mahan. That will fix our consciousness perfectly. And nothing else. Anandita mane, the ecstasy in his consciousness made him indifferent to this world, even to this level. So overwhelmed by joy by being called by the Lord, Sanatana Goswami did not feel that his feet were burning in the hot sand. Although the soles of both his feet were blistered because of the heat, he nevertheless went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and there he found the Lord, that the Lord, having taken his lunch, was resting. Govinda, Mahaprabhu's servant, gave Sanatana Goswami the plate with the remnants of Lord Chaitanya's food. After taking the prasad, Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the Lord inquired, "By which path have you come?" Sanatana Goswami replied, "I've come by the path by the beach." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "How? How could you have come through the beach where the sand is so hot? How could you have survived that heat? Why didn't you come by the path in front of the Singhadwara, by the temple, by the Jagannath temple? It is very cool there. It is Shital. The hot sand must have blistered the soles of your feet. Now you cannot walk. How did you tolerate it?" And Sanatana Goswami replied, "I did not feel much pain, Sanatan Kahe. Dukha buhuta na pain. Pai vrana hana achetana janilun. Nor, I didn't feel pain, nor did I know that there were blisters because of the heat." His mind was filled with the ecstasy of his relationship with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the thought of the meeting. "But why didn't you go by the Singhadwara? It is cool there. You would not have had to suffer in this way." "I had no right to pass by the Singhadwara, for the servants of Jagannath, Nahi Adhikar." He was so sensitive to this point, which he described right at the beginning of this chapter. His thought was, "I will not be able to go see Lord Jagannath. I will not be able to see Mahaprabhu, who lives near the Jagannath temple, because I have these horrible sores. And if one of those servants of Jagannath, somehow, if I touch him, what an offense. I would not have no adhikar to go in that way, for the servants of Jagannath are always coming and going. And they're coming and going without interval, and if I touch them, I shall be ruined. I shall be ruined because of my offense. Having heard all these details, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatly pleased, spoke as follows. My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. He is speaking truth. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. It is his decoration. It is the truth, but it is not the whole truth. If one transgresses the law of etiquette, people will make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Is this exactly what has satisfied the mind of Mahaprabhu? Who else but you will show this example? He has completely satisfied the Lord by how he has acted. After saying this, you have performed the etiquette so perfectly. You're ready to go any inconvenience so that the servants of Lord Jagannath will not touch you. Then how does Mahaprabhu act? And he is Lord Jagannath himself. He embraces Sanatana Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj makes it very clear that the moisture oozing from the itching sores on Sanatana's body smeared the body of the Lord. Sanatana's heart is cracking. The pressure is on. He could escape by... He's even willing to escape touching the servants of Lord Jagannath by the ecstasy of his mind being filled with the thought of getting the remnants of the food of his worshipable Lord, and he doesn't even feel the pain of the blisters, and then his worshipful Lord embraces him. And he feels that pain. That pain is unavoidable for him. Mahaprabhu is testing him to the core. Sanatana Goswami forbade Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Don't do this! Don't do this! Forbade him. Nishedha restricted him. He forbade Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to embrace him. And the Lord did so anyway. And again, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells us, thus his, Mahaprabhu's body, was smeared with the moisture from Sanatana's body. And Sanatana became greatly distressed. Not Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. You want to do it. Therefore, my duty, like Arjuna's duty, was to surrender and fulfill your desire. So therefore, very happily, I fulfill your desire and allow your body to be covered with this pus. No. When Krishna made Arjuna surrender, he split a hair separating morality, which is not bhakti, from satisfying Krishna, which is the essence of bhakti. He made this very clear distinction, and he wanted Arjuna to understand it, that the highest form of religiosity is to please your Lord. And Arjuna was requested to give up all his other conceptions to please his Lord. But Sanatana's only desire is to please his Lord, and he's even willing to walk on fire to please his Lord. And he doesn't even care about it because of the ecstasy of pleasing his Lord. He doesn't care about the fire. He doesn't feel the fire of the hot sands. He doesn't feel the blisters on his feet because of his anandita mani, the ecstasy of his Lord, of loving service to his Lord in his mind. That did not distress him. But here, he was feeling great distress. What is Mahaprabhu doing to his surrendered servant? Why is he doing this? Sanatan wants to escape. Indeed, he wants to escape this horrible situation. He's willing to give up his body to escape. And Mahaprabhu chastises him. Thus both servant and master, scene ended, depart for their respective homes. And the next day, Jagannanda Pandit went to meet Sanatana Goswami. And Jagannanda Pandit is going to offer Sanatana Goswami a way of escape from this distressful situation. When Jagannanda Pandit and Sanatana Goswami sat together and began to discuss topics about Krishna, Sanatana Goswami submitted to Jagannanda Pandit the cause of his distress. He opened his heart to this exalted devotee, who was also a Nitya Siddha Parikar. He was also an eternal associate of Mahaprabhu, of Krishna. So Sanatana said, "I came here to diminish my unhappiness by seeing Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the Lord did not allow me to execute what was in my mind. Although I forbid him to do so, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nevertheless embraces me. And therefore his body becomes smeared with the discharges from my itching sores. In this way, I am committing offenses at his lotus feet, for which I shall certainly not be delivered. And at the same time, I cannot see Lord Jagannath. This is my great unhappiness. I came here for my benefit, but now I see I am getting just the opposite. I do not know, nor can I ascertain, how there will be benefit for me." His words are very similar to Arjuna's in approaching Krishna and surrendering to him. And Jagannanda Pandit said, "The most suitable place for you to reside is Vrindavan. After seeing the Rathyatra festival, you can return there. The Lord has already ordered both of you brothers, you and Rupa, to situate yourself in Vrindavan. And therefore, there you will achieve all happiness. Your purpose in coming here has been fulfilled, for you have seen the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, after seeing Lord Jagannath on the Rathyatra car, you can leave." This was the advice of Jagannanda. Sanatana Goswami replied, in other words, he's telling him, take shelter of your service. Proximity to the Lord It's causing you distress. Just take shelter of your service. This is your real shelter anyway. It is the shelter given to you. Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham is the shelter given to you by Mahaprabhu himself. Take it. It is yours. It is the land of your family, given to your family, Rupa. Also, so Sanatana Goswami replied, "You have given me very good advice. I will have everything by doing this. I shall certainly go there, for that is the place the Lord has given me for my residence." And after talking in this way, Sanatana Goswami and Jagannanda Pandit returned to their respective duties. And the next day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Haridas and Sanatana Goswami. And that will be the last verse we shall read today. Just a point on Sanatana Goswami's words in reply to Jagannanda Pandit. "You have given me very good advice. I shall certainly go there, for that is the place the Lord has given me for my residence." In other words, his desire was to surrender. Prabhu Datta Desh. That Prabhu, my Prabhu, my Master, charitably has given Datta, this Desha, this country, as mine. This is the land, the realm of my service. I should accept this fully and surrender to it, because surrender, as we were speaking of before, comes in the realm of service, devotional service, service for the pleasure of my Lord. So Prabhupada, in his purport, speaks about the importance of Prabhu Datta Desh, your realm, your land, your place of service, and therefore your surrender to it, and finding the Lord in that. So Prabhupada, I won't read the whole thing right now. Just the last line by Srila Prabhupada. "Devotees in the line of Krishna consciousness must go to different parts of the world and preach as ordered by the spiritual master." He's speaking about Prabhu Datta Desh. That will satisfy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But yet, it is not going to satisfy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the case of Sanatana Goswami, because he wants to test him to the core. And what is the core? It is love. Tomorrow we'll speak more about testing. One verse on surrender from the 11th canto, and then one purport by Srila Prabhupada, which is very, very important and very powerful. This is the mood of surrender. "My dear Lord," Uddhava speaks to Krishna, "for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death, and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar." You want the... But just let me... Okay, you can have it right now. Yes, well, you're not one to... Oh, but I need it back. But can I have, may I borrow that verse I just gave? Because it's such an amazing metaphor. Because umbrellas protect us from the rain. So the feet are an umbrella in a funny way. Because your feet are an umbrella, O Lord, who protect us from the rain of Kali. The horrible rainstorms and hailstorms of the miseries of Kali Yuga. On every level, Because Kali Yuga, it crushes the romantic desires, you know, the romanticism of life. Oh, it's going to be like this, and oh, it's going to be so like that, and the kids are going to be like that, and the economy's going to always... It crushes it. Even your computers get viruses. So an umbrella we put above us. So it's very, very nice, because umbrellas protect us from the rain. And this umbrella of Krishna's lotus feet is very, very nice, because we put it above us. We put our head to Krishna's lotus feet. But there is, in this umbrella, there is a rain also. There's a showering pouring of rain. Abhivarshadav Amrita. There is a rainstorm of nectar that comes down from the two lotus feet of Krishna. But we have to take shelter there. We have to know that there is nowhere else to go. And it's so easy to say that, oh Krishna, I am yours. You can do whatever you like with me. But please know that, again, conditions do apply. No thorns, only roses. No health problems. No levitation health problems, no this problem and nope, because you'll see that if you give me those problems, that I'm going to run. If you different from, because I'm not Haridas Thakur, if you place temptations before me, I shall fall. That means I'm not a trusted enough servant. What to speak of the love in the mood of the Brijvasis. So therefore, the testing goes on. So we'll talk more. Tomorrow is the day we speak about tests. But one more. I shall beg your patience to read one more verse in purport. Oh, I'm sorry. 11.19.9. Maharaj, now I will return your property to you. It is once given. This verse defines how Krishna is one worthy of serving, and Prabhupada's purport is very telling. Oh my Lord, because this is 6.19.5, at the end of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. O my Lord, because you are endowed with causeless mercy, and that's not all opulences, all prowess, and all glories, all strength, and all transcendental qualities, because of this you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the master of everyone. Because you are the master, you are a suitable person for your servant to place his head by your feet. Here is the purport of Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Tatosi Bhagavan Prabhu means, therefore, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of everyone. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all six opulences in full. And moreover, he is extremely kind to his devotee. Although he is full in himself, he nevertheless wants all the living entities to surrender unto him so that they may engage in his service. Thus, he becomes satisfied. Although he is full in himself, he nonetheless becomes pleased when his devotee offers him patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, a leaf, flower, fruit, or water. In devotion. Sometimes the Lord, as the child of Mother Yasoda, requests his devotee for some food as if he were very hungry. And sometimes he tells his devotee in a dream that his temple and his garden are now very old, and that he cannot enjoy them very nicely. Thus he requests the devotee to repair them. Sometimes he's buried in the earth, as if unable to come out himself, and he requests his devotee to rescue him. Sometimes he requests his devotee to preach his glories all over the world, although he alone is quite competent to perform this task. Even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all possessions and is self-sufficient, he depends on his devotee. Therefore, the relationship of the Lord with his devotees is extremely confidential, secret, sweet, intimate. Only the devotee can perceive how the Lord, although full in himself, depends on his devotee for some particular work. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 11:33, where the Lord tells Arjuna, Nimitta matram bhava savya sachin. I want all the people on this battlefield are already slain, but I want you to be an instrument. My instrument. O Arjuna, merely be an instrument in the fight. Instruments have no false ego. Instruments take no percentage for themselves. Lord Krishna had the competence to win the battle of Kurukshetra, but nonetheless he induced his devotee Arjuna to fight and become the cause of victory. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please listen. Please listen to this, and then we will end. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite competent enough to spread his name and mission all over the world, but still he depended upon his devotee to do this work. Considering all these points, the most important aspect of the Supreme Lord's self-sufficiency is that he depends on his devotees. This is called his causeless mercy. The devotee who has perceived this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by realization can understand the master and the servant. Yes, very revealing. Mahaprabhu had given Sanatan his service, and Sanatan wanted to perform that service. And yet, tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall hear that Mahaprabhu will not let him do it, because he has another plan right now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Sri Sanatana Goswami Pad ki jai. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki, Bolo Giriraj Dharan ki, Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki, Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Doesn't that feel good?